It is Tuesday, the 8th of December. This is episode 71 of Digital Outbox. Welcome along. I am joined today by Ian.
Good evening.
And also we got Henry on board. Hello, Henry.
Hello there, Chris. How are you today?
I'm very good in this nice cold weather. Brrr. Mind you, I think it's colder where you
now,
are.
Now, you say cold. I think we need to quantify just how nipple-erectingly cold it is in Glasgow right now. So there's a thaw on tonight. Everybody's very excited. It's minus 12 right now.
Blimey heck. That is proper cold.
It was minus 15 this morning. It really did chaff.
Isn't that bone chill?
Bone chill, that's the word. That is no, it's in Wikipedia.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, seeing as we're supposed to be getting this done within
is
the
that
hour,
the chat? Go on then.
Yeah.
Have you been stuck in the snow, Chris?
I did get stuck in the snow for a couple of days. We had a foot of it and then it all went in a couple of days and there's only a bit left.
Seriously, it all went in a couple of days?
Yeah, it rained and then it just sort of washed itself away. There's still piles of where people have cleared their drives and stuff, but other than that, we're all good.
Me and Henry can't drive anywhere.
No.
Yeah, so you're still suffering.
No, on Monday morning, the weather forecast said snow and I looked out the window and it was raining. So I thought, oh, well, they've got that wrong again. And it was headed out and actually it did turn to snow very, very quickly and an awful lot of snow. And I live on a bit of a hill, and at the bottom of the hill, I applied the brakes to the car and applied more brakes on the car, and the car continued to continue. And eventually, the whole wheels locked up, and I employed the only other measure left to me, which was to put my hand firmly on the horn and just leave it there. And fortunately, the van going past the main road managed to get past me. I managed to miss that. And the traffic on the other side of the road managed to stop and let me through as well as I skidded into the main bit of the traffic. I thought I should.
You didn't try the
again.
Fred Flintstone method of shoving your foot out the door then?
That might have worked a bit better. But yeah, it was a bit hairy.
Wow, that sounds a bit frightening.
So don't stop me now.
Oh, well, I'm certainly not having a good time, though.
Sorry, bad jokes are us.
Slick.
Honestly, it's been atrocious up here, but really, really bad. And apologies for our slightly later than normal podcast. I blame the weather, just like everybody else in Scotland is blaming right now.
Well, why
including
we just,
our feckless transport minister.
But why do we just blame David Cameron? I mean, it's obviously the government's fault.
Quite clearly. Quite clearly. Anyway, enough. Go on, Chris.
Enough. Yes, so other than snow this week, we've had tons and tons and tons of Google stories because they've had, I guess they're another event, as seems to be the want of all these companies right now to have events.
20 events. It's ridiculous.
But they have been announcing lots and lots and lots. So let's start off with Google eBooks. They have announced their answer to, I guess, the Kindle and all the, you know, the bookstores appearing on all the tablets and stuff.
Yeah, Google eBooks. It's available in the US from an eBook store. It's up and running right now. So it was available from the 6th of December. And they've got 3 million books, which sounds impressively large. But
a large pile of books, yes.
2.8 million are free. So it's the ones, and that's from their books that they've scanned in over the last 10 years, much to...
Yeah, and all that kind of hassle that we had about, you know, why do they have a right to do all this? But anyway, so I guess they've decided they're going to release it in this format.
Yes. Hmm. And they have an HTML5 viewer, which so you can, on the web, you can view your collection of books. And they also have Android apps and iOS apps. Now, it is only American at the moment, but I signed in with my Apple American account and downloaded the iPad app. And
all right.
Similar to Kindle, similar to iBooks, you can grab a book, open a book, it syncs wherever you are, so if you open it up on another device, it continues on from there.
Nice. So, I mean, I guess the only probably device it doesn't work on at the moment is the Kindle, because that doesn't use, as far as I'm aware, EPUB format.
No.
Whether it could use the PDF, I don't know.
And it's EPUB and PDF formats that they're supporting. And they also seem to have a concept of you can buy from Google Store or you can buy from other stores that support these formats and store your content within the Google Book service.
So it's a cloud service, I guess, where, you know, and you drag it down to local devices if you have those devices.
Yep.
Sounds good.
And it's expected to be in Europe next year.
I wonder whether it can compete with Amazon and the Kindle, which seems to be on a big, big roll at the moment.
I don't think it can.
No, I think it's going to be a tough one because, say, they seem to have got the initiative now. They're massively onto the TV advertising for Kindle.
And just while we mentioned Kindle, how are you getting on with yours?
Yeah, still good.
Good.
Still rock it out for a chapter every now and again.
So you've not been on for a while, Henry. Would you buy a Kindle?
I think when they announced the new ones, I was kind of tempted, but I'm actually thinking that I don't really read enough books all the time for it really to be worthwhile. When you look at the alternatives iPhones or iPads or any of these other things which do so much more than just read books, then that they've got to have it for me. I don't know.
But
that
then they have the price point to match as well, don't they?
Yes, they do. They do. I mean, but the thing with I think what might swing me with down the Kindle route is if electronic versions of books were as cheap or cheaper than the real McCoy.
I think we're getting there. I mean, from the looks of it online, that certainly the not all things are cheaper, but actually I'd say majority are now cheaper to get as for your Kindle. But yeah, it's made me read more, definitely. I mean, more than I ever would before. And if they ever get themselves sorted with the proper, well, a good selection of newspapers that you could have a daily delivery of, sounds good to me at a good price.
Excellent.
Sorry, I forgot I was hosting them for a minute in a move akin to Sweeps. Right.
who the hell is Sweeps?
Who's that?
Which one of it, man?
Sweeps?
This isn't Xbox Live.
So... another announcement from Google was their Nexus S. So this is their next piece of hardware, which they've kind of been working with Samsung on delivering. So it's almost like the Google Phone 2, isn't it, really? But they're whacking on their new operating system, Gingerbread. It's going to be the first device that has that on it. And it's designed to be a completely unlocked and what they call the kind of Google experience. So you're not tied in with any carriers' junkware. And release schedule.
So is this any difference at all, really, to the Galaxy S, which is the Samsung phone?
I think it's got new hardware inside it, and also it's got this sort of curved profile. I don't know what they call it, but it's actually the whole device is curved, including the screen at the front. So I think it is different from that piece of hardware, yes. It looks incredibly nice. I don't know what you think. But it just looks like quite an attractive phone to crave over.
No, I think the device looks very nice. It's a 4-inch screen, so slightly bigger than the iPhone size. Not the same resolution, but still a very good resolution. It's 480 by 800. And I mean, I guess the bit of tech that stands out for me was this NFC or near field communication, which was kind of trumpeted for the next iPhone or the next iOS devices. And the Nexus S has it a lot, and Gingerbread has support for it. And this is, I think we've covered it before, this is a bit of tech that lets you read tags and lets you know. I mean, it's a kind of short-range wireless technology, so you can, you know, contactless buying and all that kind of stuff.
So it's a bit like you can do small purchases up to 15 quid, I think it is, something like that.
Okay, so is it based on something like the RFID tags type stuff? Is that the kind of thing? Or
I think it's similar to that, but if you look at things like the Oyster card and you know, you've seen the Barclay card contactless system advertised on TV, it's that kind of thing.
Very good.
And I think that was the bit that stood out for me, that looked really, really nice. But I still think if I was an Android user, I'd be frustrated that yet again Google have turned around and said, if you're wanting this pure Google experience, like the best Android experience, then this is the phone.
Well, I don't know if I guess it's just one of those things it's hard to keep up with, yes, as a user. But this is the phone, like you should have well, really gone for the Google phone before, this is now the phone that you should go with.
Yeah.
And I think the reviews in general have been saying that actually this is a great proposition in general. If you haven't got a smartphone already, this is probably a good one to go with.
I quite liked TechCrunch kind of summed it up for me, and I think it just depends. I never checked who wrote this because they seem to have very much an Apple camp and a anything but Apple camp, and it tends to be whoever's written it will put that spin on it. But their bottom line was, if you're an iPhone user, this isn't going to make you switch. If you're an Android user, you'll want this phone more than any other. And if you're currently neither, we recommend that you go with the Nexus S. And I thought that was a kind of good summation. Don't know about the last point, but then I would say that.
Yeah, I mean, say, you do get heavily invested in whatever platform you end up with.
Oh, so definitely.
In some ways, the Google platform allows you to sort of be, well, I don't know, I was going to say actually a bit more future-proof, but actually, you know, the way that Apple keep developing up their phones each year, you know, they do prove that they are, every time they're released, they're still releasing the best device that's out there, probably.
And just to be a bit more UK-specific, it's available, I think they said, from 20th December. And it's
just before Christmas.
And it's Carphone Warehouse. They're taking orders from now, or from when it was launched. I think it was announced last Wednesday? Or maybe it was this week. I'm losing track of time. I blame the snow.
But whatever, it's not cheap though, is it?
No. So £550. But that's unlocked. So you could then basically go for any tariff you then wanted to go for, and that's comparing to the £500 for the iPhone. Or they're doing it for free for £35 per month, and I guess that'll be a 2-year contract.
And that really is the difference between it and the and the iPhone, isn't it? Really, the Apple takes such a huge cut of the cost of these devices that they don't really allow any discounting from the carriers or limited discounting. Whereas all the Google phones have all been well discounted and able to do that. And lots of people, when you compare them, would say, well, you know, I'll just keep paying what I'm paying a month and get a smartphone, and I don't really want to pay
absolute
money for the iPhone.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of people are looking at maybe both devices and thinking, I'm not seeing much difference anymore.
No,
you know, both have got massive app stores. Both have. I still think the best applications are still coming up in the iOS device. There's been a bit of a debate over the last couple of weeks about, you know, have both platforms got the best apps, and they seem to have comparable apps, but there's always a slightly more maybe desirable set of apps sitting in the iOS. Yeah. And I think
developers still make more money out of iOS.
Oh, definitely.
That's going to be a tipping point that will eventually tip, probably, but for now I think makes more sense to put more effort into the iOS.
Well, some developers are just saying that actually you can make money with the iOS.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think there's still... A lot of the surveys recently have compared a typical Android user and a typical iPhone user. And I mean, you compare how much each is willing to spend, there is quite a big difference. Mm. A lot of the Android devices, if you look at it, and I looked at one of the guys at work, he's not bought an app yet. Yep. And that might just be him, might just be tight. I know him, he is tight.
No, but it is a kind of a mindset and a way of thinking. Mm. I think, well, 59p, you know, I'll just pay 59p. It's a can of Coke or a Mars bar or something. You know, I'll just buy one. Whereas, you know, if you get into the mentality of, well, all my apps should be free, then you're not really looking to pay for them. And there's also the kind of how you're going to. Are you happy with the security of the payment mechanism for buying them as well?
Yeah, no, all good points.
Let's move to the next announcement. So we've had Google have also shown off their latest prototype, or a prototype of a proper Android tablet. This is running, I think, that the next version of their software beyond Gingerbread. Was it Honeycomb?
Honeycomb, yeah.
Yeah, so Honeycomb is the rebuild of Android that they are touting as the sort of one that's meant for tablet-type devices as well as mobile phones.
Yes.
And impressive it looked too. I mean, the caveats all over it saying, you know, this is a prototype and whatever, but actually it looked to be running pretty well.
I don't know if you both saw the video.
Yes, I did look at the video and I saw the new Google Maps.
Lovely.
The Google Maps were just like, oh... I do have a thing for maps, I must admit. They've now moved to, well, they're basically trying to take advantage of the hardware. So it's now, they're now using 3D. They're using the 3D chip that's on board this tablet a lot more.
They had a dual core NVIDIA chip on board.
And they've moved, I mean, Google Maps, when you load it just now in a web browser, it's all very tile based. You can see the tiles popping in, but the new version is vector based. And basically, they could just keep scrolling and it was just everything was there. It was very, very impressive demo when you started thinking about it working.
Implemented 3D elements to the map, so you can, in a bit like you can with Google Earth, you can sort of sweep down to a different, oh, I'm trying to think of the good angle word, an angle, so you can actually see the height of the buildings on the page, and I guess that data is probably centered around America right now, but where they've got people having built up in their Google Earth the cities, I'm sure we'll see 3D maps coming to UK as well.
Yeah, it was just really nice. Using the compass to orient the map and then just using touch to rotate and then also change the angle of elevation. And it was just lovely. It just looked really, really nice.
And it's suitable for offline access as well. Because it's vector-based, you can squeeze a lot more information into the memory and therefore you can store your trip ahead of time rather than having to rely on a data access, which is great.
Yeah, that'll make a big difference, I think.
Mm. Yes, I think it will.
They also showed video chat, and I guess it was a different front end to it, but not a lot else was leaked apart from, by the way, this is coming. So it was a really nice demo.
Yeah,
Google
and Maps. So they're talking next year. They didn't really intimate when next year either, did they?
Sorry, I'm shaking my head. No. Sorry, that doesn't work.
Lovely.
Wave. We thought Wave goodbye. But actually, no, it's just clinging on. Little crests of waves clinging on above the... where am I going with this?
Yeah, anyway. Just stop that analogy right there.
It stopped. Anyway, Wave is still alive because it has been taken over by the... Is it the Apache group or...
taken over is a bit strong. I mean, Google have donated it to the Apache Foundation to become an Apache project. Which is, I think that's a brilliant way to go because, you know, Google had said this is not really doing what we'd hoped for it, and so we're ditching it. But actually, by releasing all the code to people that are interested in developing it, then I think that's a really good move.
And the reasons they said that there are still some big users of it, not sure why and where they're using it, but that's why they don't want to kill it off because those users have still got an interest in. Taken on and the technology involved, I'm sure will be. We said all along, we're pretty sure we'd see the technology somewhere else. Well, but just not in the same way.
The new preview of Google Groups that started coming out today is very Wave-esque.
Yeah, and all the document editing that you have in Google Docs, I'm sure it would have used some sort of, and in fact, all the Office Docs and things like that. I think it probably uses some similar technologies at least.
So I'm pretty sure one of the big users was the American Navy. It was one of the American defense kind of areas were still seemingly heavy users, and there's a few others as well. And I think it just kickstarts development again. Soon as they said we're finished with this, it was like, well, why do any more? So yeah. Well played, Google.
Good stuff. And in an ironic thing, title of our next element called Google Chrome event seems like just one big Google event that Chrome had a little bit out of.
No, that was a separate Google Chrome event last night.
Really?
Yeah.
They called them separate events.
Yeah, yeah. No, I sat and watched it. It was streamed live online. Wow. It was either play Halo with you and listen to you get grumpy or watch some really boring Google guy talk for an hour and a half. He was awful.
What an indictment of you, Chris.
You've not seen him play Halo.
Google do seem to have a good... I'm having real trouble with words today. This is bad for a podcaster, isn't it? Never mind. They seem to have got the nerds sewn up anyway. They've pretty much everyone you see is a nerd from Google. Right, so Chrome is being released. Or the new version of Chrome, I should say. They seem to release one every 2 seconds. But this one looks quite exciting.
So you're now talking about the old one, aren't you?
Am I?
Yeah, because there's another one being...
Poor Henry, I've missed you.
It's not what he said last night.
Like a hole in the head. Right, carry on.
I think it's just the cold. The cold is now, it's keeping us like fresh Whereas you're sitting in your sauna-like environment of like minus two.
Yeah.
So the,
I have got some heating on. So I have managed that.
So I've scribbled down loads of notes from last night, and I'm not.
This is quite daunting.
No,
yes.
No, I'm going to do it really quick. Google, Chrome, the browser itself, is going to get a lot faster.
Again.
Well,
it's already rocket ship.
Was it Crankshaft? Is the new add-on to their V8 JavaScript engine that they added in a year ago? And that's not even in my notes, and that's the scary bit. So,
Crankshaft. Nice.
So that's getting added into again. The only thing that was I thought was a bit shady. They started comparing how fast it is now compared to IE8 was or IE7 was 2 years ago, which is really unfair because it's every browser's increased in speed. So I thought that was a bit sneaky. So they're making it faster. They're adding Google Instant technology that was added to the kind of search, the Google homepage, the search page. That's now getting added to the Omnibox.
And so you'll get research results instantly returned as you type.
Yeah, and they showed you that. And that looked really nice. They've added a PDF reader for speed. So instead of launching anything else, it's now all built in, a bit like Flash is built in. And again, that was viewing documents very quickly, which was nice. And they're adding in hardware acceleration via the GPU. So trying to offload what they can onto the GPU where possible.
Which is going to be really important for HTML5 and things.
Yep. And the one key thing to point out is growth. And they talked about how an active user for them is somebody using it as a primary browser and they're using it often, not once every, 4 weeks. And they've went from 70 million active users, as they term it, 6 months ago, to 120 million now. So that is actually really rapid growth.
Wow. Yes.
So that was a browser.
Good. Are we going to talk about any applications that they showed?
The web store.
Not.
So Chrome Web Store was announced 3-4 months ago, and that's now out from yesterday. And you can.
These are web applications, right? That you can buy through the browser.
Yes. So you can go to chrome.google.com/webstore, and there are apps there now that you can buy or install because quite a lot of them are free. And a bit shittily, some of them are just shortcuts to websites. So it's a bit misleading when people are saying, oh yeah, our web app's launched or we're now on the web store. And so remember the Milk announced that they're now on the web store today, and you install Bunny Rabbits, this app, and you click on it and it launches the website.
No. So it just literally goes to the Remember the Milk website.
It's Google's doing it as well. There's a Google Reader app. And I thought, oh, I wonder what they've done with a Google Reader app. That sounds exciting. And it takes you to the Google Reader website.
But I guess they are applications. You know, you are going to sites that are applications in their own right. So in a way, this is what the store's designed to do.
But
you've discovered those applications already.
Yeah, but there are proper apps, HTML5-based apps that are actually downloaded and installed. So, for example, New York Times for Chrome is an actual HTML5-based app, and it actually looked really nice. It presented the news very well. You can actually pick skins, so you can change how you want to view the news. So if you like the kind of a list view of just headlines, so you can just click on it and view one. You can basically skin the app to show me that view. If you're more based on pictures, you can skin it to show you just big pictures. And that was actually, it's a really nice app. And interestingly, you can go to the same address on your iPad because it's HTML5.
Yep, okay with all that.
It's a really nice app. And it's also taken, if you actually launch the New York Times iPad app, they've taken a lot of the design cues and the navigation, I guess the way they've done the GUI, they've applied that to New York Times for Chrome as well. So I think it's this kind of merging of what they've maybe learned from using that touch interface, the tablet interface, has now been the thought process behind the New York Times for Chrome.
Yep, and I was saying all along, I think this is where most apps are going to end up, is actually as HTML5 web services rather than actual downloadable apps. So it's going to be interesting.
And there's a couple other people that it was a very similar to an Apple event yesterday, apart from it was for geeks. It just was a bit of a bore fest. EA turned up with one of the worst guys ever, who kept on talking about Parped, and then how Parped was like one of the most popular games, and Parped was just like the way forward.
Have you played Poppet?
No,
I've never played Poppet. Parped.
Parped. The just oh Stab. The
it sounds like stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Stop it.
So their claim was that they converted the kind of flash-based game to HTML5 in 48 hours. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't really care. But the performance looked really good. It was all HTML5 based. And they also said it's not only available in the Google Chrome Web Store today, but it's going to be embedded in the new Chrome 9 browser.
Hey, so we have a game to play then.
That sounds good, doesn't it? And that brings back all those things of Solitaire and Minesweeper.
This isn't going to make companies want to install it, is it?
As soon as I heard this, I just thought of Firefox and bloat. And are we going to lose our nice fast Chrome with all these embedded things starting to appear?
I still remain confident that no, because that yes, okay, they're embedding this game, whatever that means. But
pop it,
stop it.
It will stop a company installing that if they have a game embedded. So if they want to get into companies,
that's not going to. And Amazon were there as well, and they showed two apps. One was called Window Shop. Which is I think there's an app came out for iPad and iPhone, which was very similar. So it's a kind of touch-based interface, very visual, and but it needs Flash, which I thought was a bit of a fail.
Epic fail, I would have thought.
Epic, there you go, epic fail.
Well, only if you've got an iPad.
No, but there's an app already on the iPad. So I don't know why there's an app on the iPad that does the same thing that doesn't need Flash. Yeah, if you want to use it on your browser, you have to install Flash. But Flash comes built in with Chrome. So splitting hairs. They also showed you Kindle, and Kindle for the web is coming. So one of the key aspects of the Google eBook store was that they're having this HTML5 web-based store, bookstore and also viewer, but it's coming for Kindle. It's HTML5 based, and it looked fine. That was great, but that's next year.
Yep. Good stuff. and I guess finally... is it finally? I think it is.
Yeah,
no, not finally yet. Nearly finally. Chrome OS, their tablet operating system.
Ooh.
Indeed.
Or netbook operating system.
Well, I really like this, and I'm worried that I like it.
Have they announced it yet? As fully announced on the dates and things or not?
They gave you a date, mid-2011.
So they've pushed it back again, basically.
Yeah,
from the rumors.
Yeah, and they also explained why. So what they did show you was basically a kind of no brand laptop device, and they showed you somebody logging in, taking a picture. It checks for updates and it takes you to your desktop, and that takes less than 60 seconds, because all it is a browser with your apps installed within the browser.
Is that not going to get a bit bloated the more apps you have, though?
Yeah, and I think this is the thing. And this is what some people are picking up on. So they showed you a Resume, and it was instant. As soon as you opened the lid of the laptop, it was there, and the Wi-Fi connection was there.
I thought their aim was to get this thing booting in 3 seconds.
And I think it does. As I said, the Resume's very fast. I think once you're not going to want to shut this or to close it down fully. It's always going to be in sleep mode, probably. So the Resume.
But my MacBook Pro does that, doesn't it?
What was that?
As long as I only shut the lid when
this was instant. Okay. If you watched the video, it was like, wow. It was just like it was opened and it was slowed down because you had to type.
I haven't seen this video yet, but I
so it looked very impressive. The other thing they showed you was changing on the operating system, propagating, because all your apps that you've installed and your settings are held in the cloud, so it was propagating everywhere wherever you went. So if I went to like your house, you've got a Chrome device and I logged in, I would have all my settings. And they showed you you can have different identities on the laptop, which I thought was good, because I think that's one of the things that the iPad's missing, and it is very iPad-esque. See, when you see how the apps are displayed, it looks like an iPad. You're seeing basically the icons, and you're seeing a kind of a set of icons to click on and launch. Very iPad-esque. But you could have multiple users, and there was also a guest mode. So if I came round, I could log on to a guest mode. I could sign into my Chrome. I would get all my apps, etc. But it's a full incognito session. So once I'm finished and I close it down, everything's white. And it's all done privately, so nothing's actually, nothing's left behind. They also talked about Google Docs is bringing in an offline mode. So I think they used to use Google Gears for that, but they've now got an HTML5 based solution, but that'll come next year. And in no Wi-Fi areas, every Chrome device will have cellular connectivity. So you won't be able to say it's a Chrome, you know, laptop or a Chrome OS device unless you actually provide a cellular option.
Okay, so that's quite interesting.
Yep. They talked about Google Cloud Print, so print on any device connected to the network without drivers. It's in beta now and rolling out shortly. And I thought that was a bit shady.
How does that work then? How do you do that?
Well, basically, because they talk about how a lot of people live life in the cloud, and it's like, well, if I've got one of these devices at home, then I need another PC or Mac or device or a networked printer to be able to do this. And that's the bit I thought was a bit, it's a bit like when we talked about the iPad and people are saying, is the iPad, can it replace your computer? And it's like, no, I need to connect it to iTunes somehow. I still think there's a bit of this where they're not explaining why or how this replaces a netbook or how you can just do your whole, you know, the guy doing the demo said that he's been using this as his primary device for 6 months, but he still must have another device hooked up with all the other stuff that he's doing. Because there's no driver support. There's no driver support for any USB devices.
So how does that actually work then? How does it actually
the cloud print?
Yeah. Does it actually send the document to another device that actually goes and prints it then?
Yeah. And I'll come on to it. My picks this week is talking about how the air printing works on the iPad. Ooh. And I think it's a kind of very similar thing. I might be wrong. They didn't go into it too much more than that. And they said it's in beta rolling out shortly. So one thing I thought was really good, they've partnered with Verizon in America. If you buy a Google Chrome OS laptop or device, then you will get 100 megabytes free every month for 2 years. So you don't need to pay anything for that. You don't need to sign up for any contracts. You get that 100 meg every month. And I thought that was pretty good.
It's better than anyone else is doing, just you know, guaranteed space. I mean, it's not a lot, obviously.
It's not a lot, but if you... But
maybe for emails?
Well, I think more... I wouldn't use 100 meg in emails, got to be honest.
I would.
Yeah, I know. I know some people would, but a lot won't. There are no contracts. It's basically a pay-as-you-go type idea. So you could buy a one-day, you know, use as much as you like for $10. So if you're away at a conference somewhere and you're wanting to do a lot of, you know, web conferencing and streaming video and all that, pay your $10. So it looks like they've thought quite hardly about just how do we do something different round about data? Because I think that's what stops a lot of people. I mean, I'm a bit ticked off with iPad having 3G and iPhone having 3G and paying twice
for this, yeah, for one.
I just like to pay once. Obviously, I like to pay once.
You're only one person.
Yeah. They talked about security and how it's auto-updated, it's sandboxed data, it's data encrypted and there's verified boot. They reckon it's the most secure consumer OS ever released. And one really sore point was Citrix came on and demoed. And if you know, Citrix is available everywhere. You can run Citrix on the iPad and it can connect back to, you know, basically you can run any app that's sitting on your Citrix server. So they demoed this and showed you Excel running and SAP and a few other tools. And it was like, well, I think that's how they're going to get around a lot of the maybe shortcomings, the same way as iPad. You know, I can connect to my Mac and do work on it from the iPad.
Yep.
Unfortunately, Citrix is renowned to be a bit slow, so I can't imagine it's going
to
be...
I can't even repeat what we used to call it, but never mind. Yeah.
Well, I'd have to say, we've got a lot of Citrix apps now, and it's actually very fast.
So it's getting better,
I think it just depends on how it's been implemented, I'd have to say. Certain apps, it doesn't work too well. Other apps, I think it's fantastic. They then came on to why it's mid-2011. They're still working on Cloud Print. They've not worked out USB support, which is...
So they don't know what they want to do with that yet?
No, they are saying it will have USB support because they know people will want to plug in cameras, hard disks, etc. And I guess a lot of the fanboys have come on and said, well, I can't think of one device apart from maybe a mouse that I would want to plug in, and a mouse is dead easy to do. They wouldn't want to plug a hard disk in because it's all in the cloud. That's the whole point of this. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but you're not going to see, you know, I'm not going to put my music library on the cloud.
Well, you're not allowed.
But you know what I mean? That's it's just things like that. I think it's just it's. I know people have a vision and there's a maybe a route to go to, but that's just not practical. It's Acer and Samsung coming out next year with it. It's mid 2011. Other OEMs to follow. But they also announced a Chrome OS pilot program. So this is basically a beta that anybody can apply for now.
Not just British Airways.
Well,
I'm just leaving. Well, I left enough sound for it. I worked out that was 5 seconds of tumbleweed. I have missed you as well. It's bringing tears to my eyes. The beta pilot program isn't just to get the software. They're actually shipping out hardware to everybody that gets accepted on this pilot program. So you get this reference hardware device, which is called a CR48 device, because it's one of the isotopes or whatever. It's a 12-inch display, oversized touchpad and full keyboard, 3G built-in, 8-plus hours active use, 8-plus days of standby. It's got a webcam. There's no caps lock. There are no function keys, there are no hard drives, and it bizarrely said jailbreaking modes built in. You can flip a switch, turn it off, and then install whatever you like on it, which I thought was a bit like, eh? There's some big businesses are part of this pilot program, but how to get it? How can we get it now? So, consumers, if you open a new tab in a page of Chrome, it'll randomly pop up an offer saying, would you like to be part of the program? I don't think there's too many for those ones. There was also a quiz a few days ago to get a Google Chrome OS sticker. Now, the winners thought they were just getting a sticker, but the sticker's shipping with one of these notebooks, which I thought was quite a nice touch. So instead of getting just a sticker, you're going to get the notebook with a sticker on it. There's a YouTube competition that you can enter as well. So if you want to, Chris can do his crazy fat boy dance and say, this is how exciting I would be if I had one of these.
I might get one.
You might get one. And everybody who was at the demo yesterday got one as well. You can also go to google.com/Chrome Notebook and fill in the form.
I am going to do that.
I just hope you live in America.
Is that what I have to do?
They suck. Because I filled it in and then somebody pointed out that open doesn't mean you live in the US only. Which I thought was a nice stab.
So that's scuppered my idea to fill in this form then.
I would go and fill it in anyway, because believe it or not, there's 60,000 of these beasts that they're shipping out.
Really? My God.
Yeah, 60,000.
Blooming gets. Right. I'm going to fill that form in then.
Yep. But I still think that's a really good move. They're 6 months away. I think in a lot of people's eyes, they're probably late, but it's a really good move. It's going to get, I think, companies and developers really enthused and a big community behind it before it even launches.
Definitely.
Yeah, only late for these sort of strange people who seem to think that everything should be developed in about 2 seconds and released with no bugs or anything.
Well, that's you. You said Google Chrome gets released every 2 seconds. So you're one of those strange people.
No, but I have no expectation of it. People, there seems to be this growing expectation that so Apple release a great tablet and people can't understand why companies haven't been able to come out with an alternative yet.
Anyway, I think it looks really good.
It does look good. So exciting stuff. I've thought that all along.
And I have to apologise. I said we'd do this under an hour. We've got no chance. That's my fault.
Yeah, we have. We can still do this. Let's go. Google Earth have released a new version, Google Earth 6. It has got the street view, so you can put Pegman down on streets and have a look at that integrated. They've put trees in.
Super.
Wonderful.
I was missing the trees. The one thing I thought Google Earth really needed was some
trees. Do you know they've modelled like I think 60 or 80 different types of tree?
There you go. And put them and planted them. And it's also you can look at historical imagery in place now. I think that's right, isn't it? So you can see the progression over time of, I guess, key places.
Yes. Or even just the different times of taking satellite photos. So for my house, I could go back 8 years before I moved in and it was all untidy. The garden looked a mess and now it looks great.
There you go. So Google Earth 6, for those interested, go take a look. Google.com/Earth should get you there.
Super.
What's that Twitter name, Ian?
This is my little funny break between going into more boring stories. And I love this because I actually follow two people that have got really bad Twitter names, or really good Twitter names, depending on how you look at it. So there was a user called The Ashes, who is a girl who lives in America, and seemingly her boyfriend or her husband or whatever calls her the Ashes, which is a bit bizarre. But she went from 300 followers to 6,000 in a couple of days.
Brilliant.
And she finally complained by tweeting that she was not a freaking cricket match. Now, I'm quite tempted to try and do that in a really American accent, but it was just total fail, so I stopped myself.
I'm not a freaking cricket match.
No, I said she's American, not Australian. That was so bad. The best bit about that is I can see you were trying in the video.
You could turn back time.
Oh, it's a Cher song.
Could find a way.
Yeah. despite her anger. No, hold on. Her name, Ashley Kerekes. She also said, this is not the account of the cricket match. Check profiles before you send mentions. It's incredibly annoying and rude.
What's she doing on a social networking site?
Exactly.
If you want to get the internet's backup, that's how you do it, love. Yeah,
brilliant. Carry on, dear.
In spite of her initial anger, she told the Brisbane Times that becoming an overnight Twitter celebrity was amazing. She started to sell T-shirts with the slogan, I am not a freaking cricket match. And
I'm
she
not
was,
a freaking cricket
I think
man.
It was Qantas have offered to fly her over to Australia.
Wow.
Which is just like the best ever.
Cool.
But the reason why I find it so amusing is that there's a Mac developer who's at Justin. And he's getting all the Justin Bieber tweets because a lot of the little girl fanboys do at Justin Space Bieber, thinking he's Justin Bieber. There's also a guy in Scotland who is now at Gordon and loved getting all the Gordon Brown hate last year. Every second day, he'd be putting a tweet out just saying, I am not effing Gordon Brown. Why can't people figure out Twitter? And it made me chuckle because it used to be at Gordon McLean, and I bet you got no grief at all, but that at Gordon was too tempting a name. So there you go, lesson learned, watch that Twitter name.
Right, so a big news story this week has been WikiLeaks, which released a whole ton of private cables, from governments
Vince.
Around the world, weren't they?
Yeah, not Vince at all.
Oh, no, we're doing the same jokes now.
I know, but that would be awful, wouldn't it? Can you imagine a million Vince cables being released and leashed on the world?
Yeah,
that's worse than anything that these guys could possibly imagine.
But can you imagine if there was? He just wouldn't be able to make up his mind what he was doing.
Well, that would be all right, wouldn't he? He could have several of himself all having a different position. That would be great.
So it seems as if... pretty much everyone, all governments around the world have pretty much taken exception to WikiLeaks now that they've released these bits and bobs out there. And the owner of WikiLeaks has found himself in what can only be described as sort of a Hollywood storyline where he's having allegations of sexual assault brought against him just to get him to shut up, I think.
Well,
and
unless
governments
they're
true. Around the world. Well, but okay,
good
it's just
point well
mysterious,
made.
mysteriously good timing, isn't it?
Well, it's not. It's not mysteriously good timing because there's a woman in Sweden who is saying that she's been assaulted, and that's it.
Nevertheless, it's a good way of a government trying to get someone to shut up. By he's had things like his accounts frozen. What's that enemy of the state? Have you seen that? It's pretty much he's going through that now.
It is. Do you know so what I thought it was like? I thought it was a bit like Al Capone, where you know they couldn't get him for all the gun running and all the stuff that he was doing. So they
did him
to
for fraud.
Him to do under fraud. So it seemed a bit like that. But maybe that's just me.
So Amazon have been pulling their support for the site, so getting rid of the DNS.
They moved over to Amazon hosting. And then a day later, Amazon removed them. And it had nothing to do with some dirty American senator putting pressure on Amazon. Amazon said it was because they're hosting content they don't own.
Right. So again, yeah. It just seems that they've almost bitten off. Well, they've irked the wrong people.
They've basically hacked off enough people that they're taking action.
And it's not just it's not necessarily that the information this time wasn't necessarily that what we would normally associate with WikiLeaks, which is a big, set of documents for that are released for a good reason. This time it just seemed like they just released it out there into the open so people could have a good browse around. And a lot of it wasn't poignant or information.
A lot of the other WikiLeaks content has been similar to that as well. I mean, they've never said they're only going to release, you know, war stories or whatever. A lot of the content on there is just it's a leak.
Yeah. So I mean, the owner's come out and said he's, you know, even if he gets taken down, he's not going to. The company will still go on. There's plenty of people there to keep the run going.
This to me is the same as like Pirate Bay. We're going to shut Pirate Bay down, and if you cut one down, three are going to pop up. People are hacked off at this. I mean, every DNS was its provider, DNS provider, and they cut off its main domain, WikiLeaks.org. WikiLeaks.ch was still running. I think they tweeted the other day they've now got 200 or 300 different ways of getting to their content now.
It's an interesting moral debate, though, isn't it, what you think about WikiLeaks, and do we need this information out there? Is it dangerous to have out there? Or should the information be out there by
it depends. At any rate, a lot of it seems to be scaremongering. Other bits of it, it does seem like that. I think the releases this time, I think some of the diplomatic ones do have consequences.
I think most things have had consequences, but it's kind of been internal, say, you know, criticism of America and UK forces and stuff, which can be dealt with inside the country. And I guess it's when one politician's saying another thing about another politician when you can cause some international relations rifts. But you know,
but it's also. For me, it just shows that the governments themselves, they love to control information. They keep on saying that us in the West have got freedom of speech. And there's two things for me this week I've been kind of pretty sickening. PayPal blocked WikiLeaks funding because the State Department said WikiLeaks was illegal. And I don't know how they're determined that website's illegal. And secondly, they've also now universities are now advising students not to link to WikiLeaks article. And that's because the US government have said if you apply for a job and you've linked to some of WikiLeaks content, they won't take you on. You're a threat.
It's a bit McCarthy-esque, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And I just cannot believe in the same breath, the American and UK governments are running around talking about freedom of speech, and thank goodness that we live in a Western, civilization that allows it. And I know it's not the same as, maybe what's happening in North Korea and China and other places where people are getting jailed for just doing, retweeting and doing blog posts. But at the same time, we don't have true freedom of speech.
No, because, it's a pretty serious thing if you can't get a job based on something you've looked at or linked to. It's ridiculous. I think there is an element of they're trying to, put the bejesus up, scare people.
They're trying to say, don't look at this, it'll affect your future. And I just think that's the wrong way of going about it.
Yeah, I mean, utterly. And another thing that surprised me out of here is what they consider to be, the things that they make secret and are generally, or things they say are top secret, generally they're a bit innocuous and nothing to them. So it shows you if they do hide a lot of stuff just because it saves embarrassment and things like that. And that's not right.
So really? I don't know where this is going to end. I mean, Julian Assange, who is the main kind of journalist behind WikiLeaks, has now been arrested in the UK. The extradition papers have been served, and the court case is next week, December 14th. And because of all the kind of big financial companies that are now withdrawing support, are now withdrawing the means of WikiLeaks getting support. PayPal, Post Finance, MasterCard, they were all hit today with massive denial of service attacks, and it was believed to be, and they've used the word hackers in a lot of the news articles tonight, but basically it's people linked to 4chan have been doing denial of service attacks on these sites.
And it'd be interesting. Oh, yeah, I'm interested to see where this goes. I know we said it was a bit of a boring story, but actually, there's a Hollywood storyline in here, definitely.
No, it's not boring. It's just like everybody's covering it. And
well, it's mainstream news, isn't it? Really?
It is. That's mainstream.
The thing for tech, or something so technical, actually, to become mainstream news, it's really quite something.
Yeah. Okay, we are due to get super fast broadband everywhere by 2015. Where have I heard this before?
This hacked me off. I don't know why you guys want to go through it, because I'm just going to get annoyed.
Go on, get annoyed.
This is complete bunk. So Jeremy Hunt launched his...
Well done.
Culture Radio Secretary. 4, Radio 4, you know what I am. And we'll come on to that at the end. But Jeremy Hunt, launched superfast broadband again. I think this is about the fourth time that the Tories have launched superfast broadband, and they've only been in, since May? It's just bunk. And what I don't get, that they're talking about that they've got £830 million available for firms in the UK to help roll out superfast network.
£830 million?
Yeah.
Didn't they say they needed £5 billion to put fibre network?
But that was when Labour were in power.
Yeah. So £500 million was already announced. £300 million is now coming from the BBC. So I guess that's David Attenborough out of a job now. And and they've added an extra 50, which I just thought was 30, because I think maybe in another one it was 480. It was 480 they'd announced rather than the 5. So they've got this figure, and their aim is within the next 5 years, UK will have Europe's best broadband network. And
all for £830 million.
He said the strategy would give the country Europe's best broadband network by 2015, and will be central. And this is key. It will be central to economic growth and the delivery of future public services dependent on quick, reliable access to the internet. And I'm like, to quote you, really? Really?
Really?
So,
that's important.
First of all, no definition of super fast. Journalists asked him, what do you mean by super fast? And he kind of fluffed that. We don't want to define a minimum speed. It hopes
56k.
Yep. So there's no definition to what minimum speed it hopes super fast services will achieve. I just don't get how can you say we've got a strategy to go from, I think we're 8th or 9th in the European table, to number 1. We're not going to invest in money. We've got no actual plan. What we're saying is private business, private industries, you try and get some of this money and you guys go ahead and do it. We'll not have a strategy at all. And we won't even tell you how fast it has to be.
It's because if they put a figure on it, suddenly it becomes incredibly expensive to do.
But then,
even if you put a relatively modest
figure
on it.
But they then said every community is to get a digital hub. And I'm like, well, what is a digital hub?
It's a digital
hub. And I've written in here, is that the green cabinets they're talking about?
No, it's the library.
And that's what I don't get. And also, what's a community? And I know what a community, but again, it's back to these generalisms. Every community is to get a digital hub. And we've covered this before. I'm lucky. Henry's lucky. We're in a big city. We're in Glasgow. We've got lots of broadband options. Like the guys I work with down south in Barrow, for example, they're currently doing their best to try and get as much public support for that crazy campaign at BT's, that Race to Infinity campaign. And they're 10th out of the 5, but they know they don't meet certain criteria. And there's a lot of people getting a lot of false hope about it. And it's just crazy. I just don't get this. It's just total bunk.
Yeah, and they probably know they're not going to do anything in the next 4 years anyway, so what does it matter, basically?
Yeah, but if it's central to economic growth, and I think most people wouldn't argue with that.
If they really felt it was central to economic growth, then they wouldn't just be putting a paltry amount in like that.
Mm. I think the best bit about this, and again, this was newsworthy, and it wasn't newsworthy because of how ridiculous it was. It was newsworthy because of this.
What's happening in the course of the next hour? Well, first up after the news, we're going to be talking to Jeremy Hunt, the Culture Secretary, about broadband.
And that is just the best ever. That made me chuckle so much.
Oh, dear.
And do you know the best bit about that? He did that before 8 a.m. He obviously apologised. He was mortified. And quite rightly, he's mortified. The guy's made a mistake. But
mortified, he was killing himself laughing.
Oh, it was the fact that he says, "Oh, I've got a coughing fit."
he was just absolutely.
I've got a huffing fit.
But it was the other guy then repeated it later on.
Yeah, Andrew Marr.
Andrew Marr. So Andrew Marr was talking about it, and everybody must be terribly embarrassed at the fact that he introduced, and then he said it as well, and he went, "Oh, I didn't mean to do that. It's just very easy to do."
No, he says what he said was, he said, it's very difficult to talk about it without actually doing it. That's what he said.
So I think well done me for getting out of that without actually saying it.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
But to be honest, it sums up the guy completely. That was never a Freudian.
Okay, subsidised iPads are coming to the UK.
Well done, Henry.
Yeah, a bit later than I foresaw, but better late than never. And I did predict this was going to happen. Yeah.
I think you should set up a website, henrysees.com, and just let people pay for you to predict things.
By 2015,
no
UK
dates.
Will have 1 meg broadband.
No dates, just predictions.
No dates, no numbers.
The sun will one day explode.
Well, put it this way: if you don't put a date or any kind of technical content against it, you could work for the government.
You could make announcements.
Yeah.
Well, I have a bit of a secret about working for the government, but I can't tell you about it
because otherwise you have to kill us.
Yeah. See, if I go to WikiLeaks, will it be on there?
Probably.
Was it something about governmental cables? Right, so Orange are going to sell the 16GB 3G version of the iPad for £199. 2 year contract.
Ouch.
That's ouch. Wow. How much? So £27 a month for 1 GB of data, which isn't enough. So total of 848 plus. Is that including the 199?
Yes.
So, and you could have got that for, I guess, in region of 650. Is that how much they cost?
Oh, you could have bought that iPad for 529. It's underneath. You just need to read it. You can buy. I'm trying to do the math for you. Try to help. You can buy the same iPad for £529, and you could sign up to a £10 a month contract with O2 or Vodafone, and you pay £769, so almost £100 less. And that's probably the worst deal. I mean, I'm picking up £10 SIMs off of eBay that last for 3 months or 3 gig.
Yeah,
you know, it's a no brainer.
But then again, if you haven't got the upfront price, and you know, it does disguise the cost of these devices when you give it month by month. Or if you say you had to get a loan to go and get it in the first place, maybe it makes more sense then.
Well done, Henry.
Maybe.
That's all I'll say.
Yep.
Never again will I not listen to you.
So iPad, which is considered a hit, Windows Phone 7, Henry, you're telling me it's not a hit.
No, it's not. Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal had a great interview with Microsoft's Joe Belfiore, or however you pronounce his name, who's the guy that if he doesn't know anything about, if he knows anything, he knows about Windows Phone 7. If he knows about how many they've sold, then if anybody knows, he'll know. And he wasn't telling anything. And he was pressed to say how many of you sold, and he wasn't giving anything away. And when he was asked if pressed and said, you know, is this going to be a real rival to Google or to Apple, to their mobile platforms within 2 years or a couple of years, he said maybe. So very equivocal there. He doesn't even know if Windows Phone 7 is actually going to be a hit or even competitive within a couple of years, which is quite telling, I think.
They are going out of their way to not big this up, and I guess for in some ways a good reason. They want to, I guess, quietly get rid of all the bugs and get work out of direction. I mean, because in general, the operating system itself has been well received.
Yeah, I think people that have got one of these phones think they're all right. They think they're fine, but it's not.
We've heard a lot of this from Microsoft, just talking down everything at the moment, just to almost going under the radar with everything they're doing. Say it's a bit strange, but anyway. We'll find out in a couple of years. What does the website Henry Sees say?
Yeah, it says that they ain't going nowhere.
you do know I'm going to go and register that tonight.
With a big pair of eyes.
Yeah, pretty much. That's all I need. No, I'm just thinking of just taking Henry's face and a little speech bubble against each one.
And it just have a Twitter account associated. It picks up the latest Twitter. Let's do it.
I'm doing it now. I can't wait.
LastPass has acquired Xmarx, so this is, I guess, the future of Xmarx secured. And they have released what the kind of pricing, because they said that they needed to have a pricing associated to keep this thing alive. And they have released that. So it is going to be, so you can have a premium account for $12 a year. You can have syncing across Android and iPhone phones, things like that. Am I right?
Yeah.
Good.
Now, is anyone actually buying that? I mean, you know, they said they, you know, Ian, you said weeks or months ago that they were looking for people to, 100,000 people to sign up and or say that they would sign up. But are they really getting the users to do that for a bookmarking service?
Oh. Are you going to, Ian?
Yeah. I find it really valuable.
$12 is nothing really, is it?
And maybe it's just my kind of use case is just a bit odd, but I'm running Chrome, I'm running Safari, I'm running Firefox on the Mac. I'm running the different browsers on my iOS devices, and then at work I'm using, I think, four different browsers.
I think and it's just funny, such one of the Xmarx users are all a bit like you, Ian, where they've got a really good usage case for it, and therefore $12 a year, I think a lot of them would
it's
be prepared
to do it.
If you're only using your own computer and maybe one work computer, then it doesn't make so much sense. But I think for Xmarx users, they, you know, as was seen by the kind of people moaning when they said they were going to shut, I think it's going to. I think they might just pull this off.
Maybe. Well, there we go.
Well, I think the key thing is LastPass is actually picking up a lot of recommendations as a great way of storing your passwords in the cloud that's secure and works everywhere. And I'm using 1Password, which is very Mac-centric, and they are rolling out other clients, but LastPass looks to be the way to go.
And
it was on there, if you remember back to the original story, they had said on their roadmap that a bookmark syncing option was definitely in their development schedule, but not right now. And Xmarx kind of passing away had made them rethink the priority against it, because they could see there was a lot of pent up demand for it.
So you can have an Xmarx account for $12 a year, or you can have a combined LastPass and Xmarx account for $20 a year. Did I say that wrong? $12 for the Xmarx, $20 for the combined Xmarx and LastPass. Sounds good. Okay, that's the end of our news. Let's pop on to our picks. Ian, you're the one with the pick this week.
I'm buying a domain right now. I'll do that later. I mentioned air printing earlier on. So as part of the 4.2.1 iOS update, air printing arrived. And what that basically allows you to do is if you've got a compatible printer, which I think is only HP at the moment, but I'm sure if I went to henrysees.com, it would tell me how many printers are going to come out over the next few years.
27.
There you go. I've got more content.
No, you've put a time limit on it. It's just going to be 27.
I've got more content for Henry Sees than any other website I've ever done, and that's in the space of half an hour. It's gold. And the thing is, I need to register this before the podcast goes out, because somebody might hold that domain to ransom.
It's such a good idea.
Who knows how much it's going to be worth? Oh, millions. Just pull my headset off. Ouch.
Let's ask Henry how much it's going to be worth.
Stop it. Stop it.
Stop it. It. That's my catchphrase. So I've not got one of those printer devices. In the developer releases of the latest Mac OS, I think it was 10.6.5, too many numbers, they had sharing included, but it was mysteriously removed. And I don't know if they had problems with it or whatever. I don't quite know. But there's two solutions. One is a piece of software called AirPrint Hacktivator, which the address will be in the show notes. You can install this for free, and it basically allows you to set up your Mac and its attached printer and make it shareable, so that if I'm in Safari or email or any application that supports air printing, I can select the content and print from my iOS device. The other option is Printopia. And Printopia does three very nice things. One, it enables your printer for sharing. Secondly, you can send any content It basically sets up a printer on the Mac, so I can send content from any iOS device and print it to the Mac, or I can print it as a PDF to Dropbox. So if I've got some nice bit of content I want to save and store away, I can just print PDF and it's there. And the printing's actually, I've actually used it a few times. You know, just a couple of emails that I've wanted printed or a map of what I've printed, and it's just, it's worked a treat. And it was only $9.99, so £6.
Nice pick.
Very nice.
And that is us done for this week.
Can't believe you two have no picks. It's so lame.
Hey, we're 4 minutes over already. Right, so you can find out all about us at www.digitaloutbox.com. We are on email, info@digitaloutbox.com, Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as GZUK. Ian, where can we find about you?
I'm on Twitter as a mysteriously named Sweeper, which is also my Xbox Live gamer tag. And my blog is iand.net.
And Henry?
Yeah, I'm Talk Rhubarb on Twitter.
And that's us done for this week. Thanks for listening, and we will speak to you again next week. See you later.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
There we go. 5 minutes over, I'm afraid.
It's a wrap.
I'm gonna click stop.
Stop!
Oh, don't click stop.
Don't click stop. This is the best bit.
This is the best bit. I've just bought henrysees.com.
You've actually got it, have you?
Yeah, it's mine. It's my
Have you registered the Twitter account?
Oh, I should have checked. I bet you that's not there. See, if that's not there, there's going to be murders.
Murders.
I predict a murder.
There's going to be murders. Still doesn't beat this.
What's happening in the course of the next hour? Well, first up after the news, we're going to be talking to Jeremy Cunt, Hunt, the Culture Secretary, about broadband.
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 Honestly.
I bet his producer cracked up. In fact, after having crapped themselves, I'm sure they cracked up.
Oh, I mean, his coughing fit were on for about another 30, 40 seconds.
No, he couldn't read the news.
No, it was talking. There's been deaths in Chile. You know, it was all that kind of stuff. It was comedy gold.